And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is good to be with you on this Tuesday, September 16th, 2025. With me is Sam Andrews. I got to tell you something. Sam is one of the finest, in my experience, one of the finest experts in certain areas of criminal activity, crime, in certain areas of looking at the bigger picture, or areas of looking at the bigger picture, and a number of other things. He's been there. He's done it. He's studied it. He has lived it. So he is going to offer a lot of insight tonight, given the fact that we've had some time now to kind of step back, reevaluate everything that has gone on over the last several days. Now, this is extremely important. I just want to kind of push off here with some factual information I believe is important before Sam joins me. Now, I speak as an investigator with experience in homicide investigation, a lot of course training and not necessarily from the police academy way back when, but very specialized forensic training, okay, in the homicides. And when you're looking at homicides, it doesn't matter. This has never changed. It's not going to change. This is 100% every single flipping time. Take it to the bank, cash a check, buy whatever. But here's the deal. When you, and any homicide investigator is going to say, this is it. I mean, there are certain facts that you have to accept, or that you, or certain facts that are indisputable facts when you're looking at a death. You have to look at the cause, the mechanism, and manner of death. Now, please, there's a reason I'm laying this all out real quick, because there are people on the internet pushing different theories, adhering to different theories. Look, and then attempting to look at the events of that day through different camera angles, and they're making some very fundamental mistakes. Some are, some aren't. But let's just lay this out. The cause of death, of course, it could be anything from what? From the coronary to a gunshot. The mechanism of death could be anything from a heart attack or hemorrhage to an infection, for example. The manner of death. Now, this is where we get into homicide investigation. The manner of death. There are four primary manners of death. Unchanged throughout history. Period. End of story. One, homicide. And of course, different degrees. Two, suicide. Three, accidental. And four, undetermined. Some call it natural, but undetermined, because you could obviously find a cause in the natural death through proper autopsy and medical examination. So just remember that there are four primary, and then there's subsets of each, but four primary manners of death. There's a reason I'm saying this. And also I want to add something else here. This is rather interesting. When you think about the FBI investigating a homicide, right now we've got about 13,700 special agents currently employed by the FBI. The vast number of that number are field agents spread across 55 field offices in the U.S., 350 resident agencies. And that also, the 350 also includes international posts as well. International posts, but some are located in the U.S. So that number is a little bit off. And there are agencies in 81 nations. Okay. Now the source of that comes from the U.S. Department of Justice. Now, the training of the field agents, they undergo about 18 to 20 weeks. It depends, at Quantico. And homicide investigation is just a very, very small part of their training at the basic field training course in Quantico. Just so you know this. The curriculum is vast. It goes from investigative techniques to forensic science, and so, but it's it's thin in terms of, it's not deep into any one particular topic, of course, because you just couldn't, the time doesn't permit that. The FBI does not have a dedicated homicide detective or detectives, all right? Or any specialized agents that simply do nothing but homicide investigations. So keep that in mind as you see the various postings and social media stuff. Now, there is advanced training that does apply to homicide investigations, but the number of agents who actually receive this advanced training has never been publicly disclosed. And just keep all of this in mind, all right? Because there's some really bad stuff floating out, misinformation floating out there. In terms of homicides in the U.S., again, this is going to come up. You need to know this. According to the FBI's Uniform Crime Reporting Program, look, if you believe this, fine. If you don't, that's okay, too, because numbers, you know how numbers are, stats are. Right? It could be used. It could be, they could be misused and munged and all that. If you believe those numbers, if you believe that source, as of 2023, by the way, these reports are issued every September on an annual basis. The U.S. homicide clearance rate comes from the FBI's Uniform Crime Reporting Program. Again, released, these numbers are released every September. The number for the clearance rate for last year encompassing, or yeah, last year encompassing 2023 was 57.8%. And what do I mean by that? So just over half, more than 57% of homicides were actually solved in the U.S. in 2024, or 2023, I'm sorry. Now, that's up from 52.3% in 2022. And again, there's a point here. The data, where does this data come from? Well, every police department, not every police department, but 16,000, give or take, law enforcement agencies cover 94.3% of the U.S., of the U.S. population. They submit their numbers. Some don't. Again, that number's only 94.3%. Some don't. They submit their homicide clearance rate. And it's all put together and published by the FBI. All right. So that's that. Again, we can watch for the last year's statistics coming out here any day or any week before the end of the month. But getting back to homicides, in all homicide investigations, there is a single cardinal rule used by every single veteran, experienced, well, every homicide detective. You protect and preserve the crime scene. Okay, that's number one. And by the way, there's only one crime scene. There could be expanded crime scenes, as we see in the homicide, public homicide of Charlie Kirk last week, with respect to the rooftop. Well, everywhere. I mean that whole area is a crime scene. But understand, those areas must be protected, where the rifle was found, allegedly found, and all of this. And the reason for that is based in part on Locard's principle. Now, I'm sure many people understand this. Whenever a perpetrator and victim, wherever there's a perpetrator and victim, together or separate, there is the enactment of Locard's principle, which means that an exchange between two or more objects in contact with one another will leave or take something. Just keep that in mind, okay? So in other words, the perpetrator will take away traces of the victim and the scene. The victim will retain traces of the perpetrator, and it might leave traces of himself on the perpetrator or near or whatever. It could be a footprint, it could be whatever. The perpetrator will leave traces of himself at the scene. So just understand that that's Locard's principle. And that's why the crime scenes, plural, must be very protected and preserved. The last thing I want to bring out is this. Many people, and I've seen this, I've gotten every single email, every single communication possible about shooting. And Sam Andrews is the expert with regard to ballistics. There's only one source. No matter how many videos you have, no matter how many eyewitnesses you have, no matter how many theories you have, there's only one source. When you have a homicide in this manner by shooting, there's only one source that can be used without doubt. I mean, one unassailable source that would be used in a homicide investigation to determine exactly where the shot came from. It's not a video. It's not what you think. It's not what you think you see. One source, and that's the medical examiner / pathologist, whoever looks at and performs the autopsy on the victim. Now, they will take into account the bullet track. I've seen bullets. I just was talking to Sam right before the show. In one case, I saw someone shot with a 9mm. It went in his right upper chest. It exited through his left thigh. Okay. A lot of bouncing around in there. However, the forensic pathology will determine the bullet track, the velocity of the bullet, whether it's high or low, and the ricochet factor. Because the ricochet factor does increase the size and even the number of projectiles, and which can give a extremely wrong impression regarding everything that that you heard. I wanted to get those facts out of the way as a baseline, because everything else, that's what I know for sure, based on experience, based on being taught, based on everything I know for sure. So Sam Andrews from the Freedom Center USA, and folks, if there's no better time than right now to get a hold of Sam and to train your backsides up if you have that ability. Sam Andrews, God bless you. Thank you for coming back. And Sam, did I get that right?
I think 100%, though.
Okay. I so appreciate you coming on, because I actually had to walk away. My friend, because some of the things that I was sent, and God bless the people who send them, were just so, even if they were true, how can you prove something without the body? With and God, please, I understand. This is a man. When I say the body, I mean with all respect, and my heart goes out, because I never want to trivialize the importance of the man himself, the victim. But okay, thank you. I've just been sent so much that until we have a definitive, believable, authenticated report, we can surmise all day long. Go ahead, sir.
Doug, it's not often we get to chat 2 weeks in a row, and I appreciate you having me this evening. I don't remember a time in my life when I've been this angry for a solid week.
Oh, man, I'm there with you. And one last thing. I said just to the chat, just let me be clear. I'm talking, yes, the medical examiner's report can be changed. I mean, look what we saw with Kennedy way back when. I get that. I'm talking about the only definitive way is an honest, authenticated, verified ME report. Detailed.
Amen.
Okay, so look, dishonesty throws everything, what I just said, out the window. I get that. Do I expect that we're going to get that? Hell no, we're not going to get that. Period. Go ahead, sir. I just had to answer that. So that's another point that we have to kind of factor in, but go ahead.
Well, Emmys will surprise you. Sometimes you get amazing reports. I worked on a case where the police claim they shot a guy pointing a rifle at him, And the ME's report showed the path of the bullets going, entering his left side under his arm and blowing out the front of his chest, where he supposedly was shouldering the rifle. And there wasn't a speck of blood spatter on the rifle. There was bone fragment, flesh and blood all over the walls, the ceiling and the floor, but there wasn't a speck on the rifle stock he supposedly pointed at the police. So, the ME report, sometimes the MEs just, they do their job. And let's pray that happens in this case. You know, I've had cops lie and say that they had a flurry of AK-47 bullets fly by their body. And they're all standing in a stack line, you know, inside a house with their butts facing the inside of the front wall of the home. And when I walked the attorneys through the home and said, I want to introduce you guys to the Immaculate Wall. And they're like, well, what's the Immaculate Wall? And I said, well, notice this wall. We have four depositions from four officers saying a barrage of bullets, multiple magazines, were fired at them and went whizzing by them. Yet there's not a single mark on the wallpaper on the inside of this wall. So apparently the bullets passed their bodies, missed their body armor, missed their bodies, missed their shield, and vaporized in about 7 inches before they hit the wallpaper. An AK-47 bullet did this.
And the magic bullet,
Wall apparently had a force field to protect it.
Amazing.
Like Star Wars stuff in a house built in 1947 in St. Louis City. So, you know, sometimes the ME guys just do their jobs. God bless them. And I hope that happens.
Man, you're so right. And Sam, I don't want to disparage people, anyone, professional that is trying to do their job, but I don't believe right now that I don't trust anything I don't trust anything or anyone unless I can make further verifications. But I'm not holding out a great hope based on recent historical precedent that we're going to get any kind of answers from this in terms of the trajectory, the track.
Let's talk about the trajectory and the track.
Go ahead.
You know, I've shot and observed the wound channels of over 3,000 mammals in my life, and I'm not going to get into why.
Okay.
But I developed the powder tungsten technology the Secret Service uses to guard the president through Powell River Laboratories as a contract engineer. The same technology was used by Naval Surface Warfare Development Group, or what you think of as Dev Group, and other national mission team assets. Now, bullets generally do one of about three or four things. And so special forces operators have two basic problems with ammunition and the way bullets behave. One is an over-penetration scenario. The bullet hits the bad guy, goes completely through the bad guy, and then leaves 70% of its energy in a wall or a tree or the side of an oil rig or the water, wherever their environment is behind the target. We call this an over-penetration scenario. Okay. Second scenario is an under-penetration scenario. The bullet hits the body armor, or it hits the body of the bad guy, and because it's spinning 260,000 RPM, in the case of 5.56s with fast twists, up to 310,000 RPM. The centrifugal force of the bullet when the jacket is compromised causes the bullet to fragment into dust, and it doesn't penetrate at all. We call that an under-penetration scenario. Okay? Now, the other two scenarios are that bullet penetrates 2 to 3 inches. It starts to open up, mushroom, fragment, and that increases the size of the temporary wound cavity, which increases the chances of a CNS hit, or what we call a central nervous system hit. And that increases your chances of stopping that person from fighting back. Okay, or if it's a deer you're hunting, it stops the deer from running away. So you have to track it. Now, the other scenario is the bullet keeps its integrity, it ricochets off bone, and it does crazy things. So there's the four scenarios of how bullets act in mammals when they're shot with high-powered rifles. Now, what controls how it acts? Does it hit bone on impact? What was the twist rate of the weapon? What was the velocity of the weapon, which the twist rate and velocity drive RPM? Okay. How thick was the jacket? How much antimony was alloyed with the lead core of the bullet if it's a standard bullet? So with the powder tungsten technology, we could, for the Secret Service, compress the cores at 3,500 PSI, and you could shoot a guy in the chest from 50 yards away with a 300 Win mag and have no exit. Of course, right. This bullet right. would come apart into fine baby powder sized tungsten particles and liquefy the heart, the lungs, and a third of the liver.
Yep.
And the person would drop like a puppet, and any innocent people around the perp weren't at risk. And the Secret Service, for obvious reasons, were very, very interested in this technology, and they bought millions of dollars of it. Now, on an extreme example on the other end, we made a 9mm handgun bullet that we compressed the tungsten core at 300,000 PSI, and it would shoot through a diesel engine block. And I'm not going to tell you how much other stuff it would go through, because you wouldn't believe me anyway. But the bottom line is that's the opposite scenario. And the admiral that was there for the test said, please don't ever make another bullet like that.
Really? I understand why, but I would think that some of these people would be begging for more, but go on.
Okay, so now let's get more specific to the Charlie Kirk scenario and his assassination. If the shooter, all the circumstantial evidence that places this guy on the roof in a very particular position, and he had a 30-06, and he had standard ammunition, either 150-grain soft point or 180-grain soft point or a 200-grain soft point. These are deer and bear and elk hunting rounds for 30-06s, depending on the bullet weight. What do these bullets do when they impact a human torso from 11 o'clock? So if you place Charlie as facing 12 o'clock from his chair, the shooter was to his 11 o'clock.
That's according to the official narrative now you're talking.
Yeah, we're talking about right. The official narrative.
Right.
What they're claiming.
Right.
So if he fired a 30-06, and they're saying 200 yards, and there's no way, because the crack boom stuff on my software analysis puts the guy way closer than 200 yards. And the crack boom is a counter sniper technique. When you fire a 30-06, the bullet is moving more than three times the speed of sound. Because it's moving faster than the speed of sound, you get a supersonic crack off the nose and where the ogive meets the main diameter of the bullet. It sounds like a firecracker, like a really loud firecracker. It's very high-pitched. And then followed up by that, if you're at the target where the bullet hits or near the target, followed up by that is the muzzle blast from the weapon itself. That's the hot gases escaping in front of the bullet. And out the backside of the bullet, it creates this giant round bubble and pressure wave that, and sound is a pressure wave, and it's a much lower frequency sound. So you hear four sounds in the environment that Charlie Kirk was assassinated in, and you can see the sound signatures on your software. You can see the supersonic crack of the bullet. Now, the order can change slightly depending on the position of the microphone. But you hear the supersonic crack of the bullet, you hear the impact of the bullet on the body of the victim, and then you hear, depending on the spacing of the building from the flight of the bullet, the extra buildings and the vertical walls, and the distance the muzzle of the barrel is, you either hear the echoes and then the muzzle blast, or you hear the muzzle blast and the echoes. And so more often than not, you hear the crack, the slap of the impact on the target, then the muzzle blast, and then the echoes from the muzzle blast, the low frequency sounds. And so that's how we knew at Butler that there were multiple shooters.
Correct.
Because there were three different, dramatically different sequences of timing and gaps between the supersonic crack, the bullet hitting the target, the muzzle blast, and the echoes. All right, this is how we know there were big problems with the whole Butler deal. Now, the Charlie Kirk, there's a couple of, it's not as convoluted as Trump's assassination attempt, but it's very problematic from a scientific external and terminal ballistics analysis.
And if I can add, from a forensic, investigative forensic point of view as well, so many violations of procedure took place in this case, in the Kirk case, as well as Butler beyond, but in this case that we're talking about. Go ahead, sir. In addition to what you're talking about.
You're watching within 5-6 minutes of the execution assassination of Charlie Kirk, you're watching people walking through the crime scene, contaminating things, moving cameras, picking up stuff. It's insane.
Yep.
Absolutely insane. And you can say, well, Charlie wasn't dead yet. The people didn't know he was dead. It's still a crime, whether he lives or not.
Yeah.
It's still a political assassination attempt, which is a felony punishable by death. Correct. So, you know, I have so many problems with the way the crime scene was handled. But more troubling for me is the way that Charlie's body moved at impact, and the way that so many supposed experts that claim, I'm a long-range shooter, I'm in the military, I was a policeman, I was an FBI agent, I was a sniper, and I haven't heard one intelligent person speak anything close to truthful. They're making assumptions that they can't make. They're drawing conclusions that they can't draw, that the evidence doesn't support. And we still don't have the ME report that describes the path of the bullet through the body. And that is the single most problematic issue with this assassination of Charlie Kirk, is that it appears, we can't tell for sure, but it appears that the bullet path is not 5 degrees off, not 10 degrees off, but as much as 50 to 80 degrees off the narrative shooter with the .30-06. Not to mention that the blood spatter or lack thereof and the exit wound and the nature of the movement of the energy being transferred to the body by the bullet and by the microphone cord under the shirt, none of that matches the narrative. That's and right. This is really problematic for me, being a physicist, scientist, engineer. These things are hugely problematic to us discovering the truth. And all I want is the truth.
Amen to that.
Lies. I don't want the misdirections. I don't want any of that. Now, is it possible that the FBI is running with this solo narrative the way they are to keep the people that they truly suspect off guard? Is that possible? I guess it is. But it sure smacks of the Kennedy and the Martin Luther King assassinations. It doesn't smack of good police work. And so is Kash Patel going to be open and honest with the people? To the degree his people are open and honest to him, maybe. But I'm not holding my breath on any of this stuff.
Based on historical precedent for over 70 years, nor should we. My question to you is, is there any reliable way, based on the video evidence alone that you've seen, to reliably and responsibly identify where the shot originated? Is there, again, the emphasis on factually, reliably, and go ahead.
Not with the information that's currently available to the public.
Thank you.
It's absolutely impossible to responsibly, much less reliably, report on the position of the shooter. And one of the things that is severely lacking from the data is crystal clear evidence on the entry point of the bullet.
That's
it's
correct.
It's pretty obvious the hole, you know, on this side of the neck, depending on which view you're looking at. It was Charlie's left, the lower left part of his neck.
Right.
That was where the bullet exited, or fragments of jacket or core exited. We don't know yet. Until we see when a bullet breaks up inside human flesh, it leaves multiple permanent wound channels. And we don't know if the bullet overpenetrated as a solid integral projectile, or if it broke into two pieces or three pieces or 300 pieces. And so, you know, I've shot white-tailed deer, and I found the core of the bullet just on the far side of the heart tissue, and found the jacket of the bullet under the skin on the back side of the far shoulder. And so, depending on if you get fragmentation of the jacket, fragmentation of the core, a couple of large particles, you can get some very odd scenarios. And when we do penetration tests for law enforcement and for the military, we can shoot the same bullet out of the same gun through the same exact medium, let's say four layers of drywall spaced 5 feet apart and a oak door, and then have a cardboard piece of clean cardboard with a clean white sheet on it to look at the pattern of the fragments. The same bullet through the same gun, shot at the same velocity, on one shot can poke a hole, one round hole through everything, and the bullet stays stable. On the next shot, break into seven major fragments and 103 microparticles. This is reality. So it's much more complicated than people think, and it's not as predictable as everyone thinks. And anyone who's drawing hard and fast conclusions right now with the amount of information open to the public is a liar and a deceiver. And let me tell you how dangerous that is. We are close to being in a civil war right now. And these liars that try to stir people up, get people angry, promote conspiracy theories with no foundation in fact, endanger everyone in this country. They endanger you, your parents, your children, your brothers and sisters, your friends. Everybody in this country is endangered by all of these morons on social media claiming to be experts. And I will tell you, not a single one have I found that is scientifically correct or being responsible. And they're no better than the security team of Charlie Kirk. And we all know what a failure that was. And before we go down the road of this satanic cult we're dealing with, I'd like to talk about Charlie's security team for a moment. I asked my wife, kindest person I've ever met in my life, the special education teacher who grew up to be second in command of a school district in a Midwestern state, and she was an administrator. She has no tactical training. She has no significant experience with guns or optics or observation or finding things of tactical significance through observation. She has no training at all. And I went to her about 3 days after Charlie died. I said, let me ask you a question. Let's say, for example, that I go out and buy two walkie-talkies for $39 a piece. And I grab you a chair and I put you on the tallest roof at UValley, University, Utah Valley University.
Right.
And I pick up the walkie-talkie and I point and I say, see this right here? This is the talk button. I want you to sit in this chair and observe these rooftops. And if you see any human being of any kind, of any shape, get on the roofs, press that button, and say five times, man on the roof, man on the roof, man on the roof, man on the roof, man on the roof. Could you do that for me? She goes, absolutely. So for $87, including tax, and 10 seconds invested in training, Charlie Kirk is still alive today. Now, someone asked me, John Moore, actually on the John Moore show Monday morning, asked me a question. Well, you know, everybody thought he was going to be the next great conservative president of the United States. What do you think, Sam? And I said, John, if he protected the country at the level he protected his own family, it would be a no for me. He chose so poorly with his security team. Now, when you...
Can you say the same, though? Sam, I agree with you.
Let me finish.
Go ahead.
But when you've got 16,000 Turning Point organizations in colleges and high schools around the country. And you visit a fairly decent-sized university, and you've got 500 to 5,000 Turning Point kids at that university. You use volunteers. Now, five walkie-talkies, two volunteers on the rooftops, and four or five volunteers on the ground with those walkie-talkies. So that's the cheap way to do it. $300 in volunteers, Charlie Kirk's still alive. Because there are fundamentals to real security. There's two types of security. There's feel-good security that makes you feel safe, which is a lie. And then there's actual security. Actual security requires fundamentals. Observation, intelligence, perimeter control, right? Communication. These are fundamental things that must take place in the professional security environment. None of that took place for Charlie Kirk. If I were Charlie Kirk's wife, I would be suing the living daylights out of his security team. I would make sure they never work for security for another human being. It is a huge responsibility to be security for human life. And if you're not a professional, don't pretend to be. If you don't understand the fundamentals of security, don't take the job. And I'm afraid
that's right.
That Charlie Kirk chose Christian men that very dishonestly purported themselves to be professionals in security. Because a professional in security, at the very minimum, would have had a drone in the air and would have been watching the rooftops, particularly in the light of Butler, Pennsylvania being less than 2 years in the past.
Yep.
And particularly in the intel of Charlie getting death threats the day of and the day before. I mean, this the level of the pathetic nature of this, of the non-security of Charlie Trump, is a tragedy I'm pretty sure most people aren't ready to talk about. But me being a security professional, I'm disgusted. I'm disheartened. My heart is crushed and heavy for the family that is left of Charlie Kirk.
Yep.
Yeah. It could have easily been four shooters. They could have wiped his wife and his kids right off the map with the lack of security they had in that environment. And I'm so disappointed. I don't even spend any more time on it, but I did want to put that out there because nobody else did.
I'm glad you did because, and again, this is from my perspective. All right. There's the investigative realm, which I chose to go down, but I've always known the difference between a man's got to know his limitations or at least what he is focused upon. You can either go for you can either be a security professional and really have that, like you, Sam, okay, you've got that wired, but I could never do that. I don't want to do that. I don't pretend to do that. Mine's on the investigative side. And so, okay. And that's a great point because, man, what we saw was horrifying in light of, as you said, Butler. And also reflected in that, what you said, I don't know how many people or how folks have you seen the 10-page indictment filed by the Utah County Attorney. I think it's the Utah County Attorney. Yeah. Have you read this indictment?
I have not.
Okay. When you read the, folks, have you read this? Anyone read this indictment? The indictment, I'll just say this, is telling in a lot of things, but it lacks a lot of detail. And it does, one thing though, it does state that, you know, there was a lot of chatter, a lot of threats that they knew about going into this particular venue. Okay.
Well, so Doug, if you don't mind, let me tie up the security bow.
Yeah, please.
We get into that stuff.
Go ahead.
And if you are listening to this podcast and you have a phone, I pray that Doug gives you permission to take a clip from this and put it all over social media.
You got everything. Folks, because go for it. Go ahead.
In the environment we are now in, we're going to get into that. I'm going to lay out the case for it. In the environment we are now in, there isn't a conservative, normal, patriotic American who is safe speaking in public right now. And so learn the lessons of the Charlie Kirk assassination. At least, and I'm not saying you have counter snipers on every rooftop, but what I'm saying is you need to take the high ground. You need to have observers that are watching the rooftops. You need to have effective and immediate communication if anyone crawls on a roof. And you need to hire real security, people that understand the fundamentals of perimeter and high ground and observation and drone usage and all of the things that we have available today that make you a lot harder to kill. So if everybody's Charlie Kirk now, let's take the great things about Charlie Kirk and advance those, and let's learn the lessons of Charlie Kirk's mistakes, particularly in the security realm, because this was a security failure of monumental proportions. This is almost as bad as Butler. Now, did Charlie Kirk have the Secret Service detail protecting him? No. Did he have money for a professional security team? He absolutely did. Millions of dollars in Turning Point bank accounts, and a lot more coming in. So from here moving forward, Erica, God bless you. My heart bleeds for you. But please, please get professional security involved, and every other conservative that's out speaking in public, get professional security involved, and that understand perimeter, high ground, observation, communications, not just the close-in personal protection diamond concepts. There's a lot more to security than that. And an ounce of prevention, right, is worth a lot more than having to spend $80,000 on a few. Please hear me. And that, you know, my mom called me the clanging cymbal when I was a little boy. The truth without love, she said. There is so much love in my prior statements here. I hope that you can see through my limitations as a human being and understand the message that I just gave. And that's for all conservatives.
Sam, I don't think I could have said that better. And I think people have to understand where we're at today. And a lot of people, again, you can spend all your time, folks, and I've, you know, trying to analyze the shooting itself, trying to analyze, well, this guy shot from the side, this guy shot from, or whatever. To me, that's an exercise in futility based on the fact that, based on the last, everything that Sam spoke about that I referenced as well. I mean, you're not going to be able to do it with any degree of authority or reality. I mean, you're just not going to be able to do it. So where should we focus our attention? And this is where Sam, again, excels at, because I too think that there's something bigger here than, definitely. I mean, there's something bigger than anyone has yet to really touch upon. This is not right versus left. This isn't.
No, it's not.
No, it's not Democrat versus Republican. Not right versus left. There's something bigger. And same with your permission. There's a gentleman that teaches behavioral profiling, behavioral sciences. His name is Chase Hughes. I've learned just a tremendous amount from him in an academic venue. He came out with a 20-minute video. Now, obviously, 20 minutes is no. But folks, in the program description box, I think that's probably that and the indictment are the only two things that are going to be in today's program description, along with Sam's information. But with your permission, if we can play like maybe 2.5 minutes of this, because I think he touches upon, and it would be a great segue into what you're about to talk about. Do you mind?
Oh, I love it. I'm always interested in other people's opinion. You know, I had a great coach that taught me that great people will teach you things you need to know and what to do, but you can learn from everyone, even if it's what not to do. Let's hear what he's got.
Okay. Again, just a few minutes. Eric, I'll tell you when to stop. Now, I have to say this. I respect the man. However, he makes some great points here. About the bigger picture. However, I disagree with him on certain things. It doesn't matter. Just folks, watch the entire thing. He's a fantastic profiler, an amazing talent. So take what you will from this short clip. And then on the other side, again, short clip, and then watch the whole thing and subscribe to his channel. Subscribe to the behavioral panel because they do a lot of great stuff. But again, listen to the bigger part of this. Watch and listen to the bigger part of this, and then Sam will come back. This would be video one. It's the only one. It's the only video there. Video one. Sorry about that, Eric the Tech. And the title of the video on his channel is Chase Hughes on YouTube. Charlie Kirk's death exposed the biggest scam in history. I think he's got it right. But Sam will expand far beyond what you're going to see here. But it's the proper, in this case, trajectory how we should view this. Go ahead and hit that if you don't mind.
Charlie Kirk is dead, and it exposed something vile and horrifying that I want to share with you right now, just kind of candidly. He was murdered while he's speaking in public to a group of college kids. And there's one part of this that I think should horrify you to the deepest parts of your very soul. Instead of a universal outrage, instead of every decent person saying, this is insane and this is wrong, the internet seemingly lit up with these celebrations and cheers and memes and people actually laughing and celebrating the murder of a man because he wore a different political jersey. So let that sink in for a second. And I don't think any of this is about Charlie Kirk, the person. And I don't think it's about whether you liked him or hated him or didn't even care. I think it's about the fact that political murder is somehow just another headline nowadays. And we scroll right past it. There is a whole new low for where we could go. And you have people online cheering like it's their team winning a Super Bowl. And what you're seeing is an evil, evil mask slipping. This is a signal, and it's a signal that we, and I do mean we all, crossed into something that is a lot darker than just politics. This right here, what we're seeing, is what happens when violence becomes part of a political conversation, when actual TV networks air over and over clips that encourage people to see the other side, not as neighbors that we might disagree with, but as enemies that need to be destroyed, as the threat to society. And you've seen it, I have no doubt. We all have seen this. People in the media saying these people are a threat, these people are dangerous, maybe some violence is justified, and it's not fringe anymore. This is mainstream, and there are thousands of these clips out there aired to millions of people, kind of nudging, suggesting, maybe planting seeds that maybe a fist, maybe a bullet is a legitimate form of political debate.
You resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck.
Biggest terror threat in this country.
I'd like to punch him in the face. I said if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face.
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
They're still going to have to go out and put a bullet in Donald Trump, and that's a fact.
A lot of people don't have the attention span to maybe stick with this, but I pray that you do, because I'm going to expose something here that's going to change everything for you if you stick around. But here's the irony, and what I think is a absolute concrete law of history. It's concrete law. The minute that your ideas require violence to enforce or spread, they're already completely bankrupt. Every tyrant, every failed ideology, every social collapse starts the exact same way. The debate dies, then violence takes the place of debate. And you can't argue with a gun. You can only kill with it. And when killing is the substitute for a conversation, society as a whole starts falling off a cliff. And we all, myself included, we all have been sold the biggest con of our entire life. And this is that the problem is left versus right. or Republicans versus Democrats. And that is the distraction fireworks show that they want us screaming about while they're doing something else. And this is a magician's trick. And I'm about to really show you what Charlie, God rest his soul, has kind of exposed here. If you turned on cable news today,
okay, you can stop it right there.
Turn it on.
Because Sam will expand upon this, because Chase now gets into, of course, the tribalism and various the various aspects of what that intro was. But I think Sam is from this point forward has a better handle on the spiritual aspect of things and the fact that we are watching, we're all being played. We're all being played. And while many people are wasting or spending their time attempting to figure out where the shot came from, who did what, there's something bigger that we need to focus upon. And this is what Sam is going to explain. Sam, thank you. You saw that. And by all means, folks, please watch the rest of that. Again, the link will be in Hagmann PI, the program description box for today. But listen to Sam, more importantly, and watch and listen and as we have this discussion. Sam, take it from here. Go ahead.
These problems that we have are more complex than the average American has the ability to decipher. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. And there are a lot of disciplines, intel discipline, PSYOP discipline, things that exist from our intelligence agencies, our military operations, things we've used as weapons against our enemies, that like almost every weapon developed, not all, but so many weapons that have been developed for our enemies eventually get turned on our own people. And in this case, the PSYOPs weapons, the technology, the processes, the things that we've learned about the human brain and about behavior and how to influence people, influence operations, PSYOPs, these types of things, Americans are being subjected to and have been for a long time. And so let's just dive right into the nuts and bolts of the fundamentals of constructing a PSYOP. And then I'm going to tie it to what actually happened in this country. Let's throw a couple of the polls up there. If Eric can do that, we're going to just throw this out as a teaser, and then we're going to get into how we got there. It's very important to understand the mechanisms used against us. And if Eric can get a couple of the poll slides that I sent him with the percentages up, if he can cue those, and we'll go through a couple of them fairly quickly. And then we're going to ask, how and why did this happen? Because right now, in America, there's a lot of false belief systems. And if you go to Scripture, and there's a verse in Scripture that says, my people perish because of their lack of knowledge. Now, a lot of people might read that and think, oh, well, we don't know physics, or we don't know medicine, or we don't know. No, that wasn't what the word in the original text meant. The original text, when we translate that to knowledge, the original text means experience, experiential knowledge. And so my people perish for their lack of experience and understanding of how things actually work. And so it's very important to understand the mechanism that our enemies use against us. I personally believe that half of this country almost has been taken over by a satanic death cult. And I'm not the only one. And if you stick with this program for the next hour, you're probably going to find the evidence overwhelming. And I'm not the only one that feels this way, because the evidence is overwhelming. And we're going to get into some of it. So here we see a poll that was recently done. Political violence is never acceptable. You can see a gradient. You see baby boomers, 93% believe that assassinations are never acceptable. Gen X, it drops to 86, millennials to 71, and Gen Z to 58%. And Gen Z was what I'm going to focus on first when we get to this. So Gen Z, these are the younger people in the United States of America. How did we get that disparity? Because if 58% is the number, if this is a reasonably accurate poll, that means 42% believe it is acceptable. How frightening is that? 42% of a whole generation of Americans thinks that it's okay to murder people, to shoot people in public in front of their wife and kids? This is a horror beyond your wildest imaginations. And as if Eric can scroll through a few more of these slides and put them up there, we're going to talk. Here's an NCRA data. 56% of self-identifying liberals said killing President Trump can at least be partially justified. And so when you see this kind of evil, what you're seeing is ultimately, I'm going to give you the end game, the answer first, maybe work backwards from there. But ultimately, you're seeing humans that believe the end justifies the means. This is what you're seeing in no uncertain terms. The question is, how did we get so many people of a particular age group in this country that have no moral framework whatsoever? There's no structure there anymore. There's no moral foundation. There's nothing, there's no foundation to even build a skeleton of a moral framework. You know, our God is a living God. Our God has taught us through Scripture that we should err on the side of life, that his creation has value. And these people that believe murder is okay, even for words that might dissent from their opinions, they can murder you. These people work for Satan. This is a satanic cult that is so prevalent in the United States right now. You have no idea. Our intel agencies know this. The FBI knows this. The CIA knows this. The NSA has all the evidence to prove this. But it's not in the public purview. The shooter in Minnesota was part of a death cult of trans people. That group used to go to the range together. But they were hooked up to other death cults around the country. This is a multi-state culture of death. And the myth is that it's the far left. It's a small percentage of crazies on the far left. That couldn't be more false. If you doubt me, look at the comments and the likes that were given to people celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk. Some of them had 4 or 5 million likes on one post, celebrating the death of a man who, for all intents and purposes, was a Christian Boy Scout. They've been trying to demonize Trump for 10 years. Russiagate, he's a Russian operative, he's a felon, he's a pedophile, he's all kinds of false accusations on Donald Trump. They demonized him for a decade. How do you demonize Charlie Kirk? The guy was a Christian man, didn't drink, didn't smoke, had no vices, believed in marriage and the family and being a father and a husband. The guy was a flipping Boy Scout, and they killed him. If they'll shoot at Donald Trump and shoot at Charlie Kirk, who won't they shoot at? You think anyone's safe, publicly speaking, at this point, standing up for Christian conservative values and God-given rights? Charlie Kirk was a hero around the world because he exemplified, he represented, he personified free speech to millions of peoples and countries that don't have free speech. Exactly. Not to Americans.
Yeah.
He was a Christian man, a husband and a wife, and an evangelist, and a disciple, and a great debater. That was the Charlie Kirk to Americans. But to foreigners, Charlie Kirk represented freedom and free speech. That guy was a Boy Scout. I mean, he was as blameless as a grown man that you could find on planet Earth. And they demonized him and they hated him. Now, why did they hate him? Has anybody ever read anything in the Bible that says a wise man loves you for rebuking him and a fool hates you? Well, that sure explains why Charlie Kirk was hated. These fools, they can't be negotiated with. Now, the guy you had on in the video a moment ago, he's right about some things. They're trying to instigate a civil war. They want violence in America to weaken our country. There is some truth to that, but that doesn't give you the answer.
Exactly. And again, I just want to push this home. He's correct, but not in the larger realm.
Yes.
If I can just, I promise this will be the last time I interrupt in this fashion. Eric the Tech, there's an attachment, PDF attachment, that I sent separate. Okay. It was, it was the second email I sent to you. You may ask, for example, in the real world, when was this war declared in the physical and by who? Who declared it? When did it start? Especially at our camp, at the campus level. In May of 1974, in the college campuses and the universities, a publication was created. I think there were 1,000 copies that were distributed roughly. Now we have copies of one of the 1,000 copies. I just can't upload it to a specific area. Something is preventing me from, the technical is preventing me from uploading it. The title of the publication, published in May of 1974, is called Prairie Fire. There it is right there. The Politics of Revolutionary Anti-Imperialism. Now, this is the beginning of the war that has weaponized our universities and colleges and targeting, recruiting from the college campuses by the instructors. If you can scroll down 7 pages, I want you to see the authors, the primary authors of that document. Okay, the 7th page, I believe, will has that information. Keep going down. This document lays out the plans to capture the youth or the young, the university's the students, to weaponize them and use communism as the tactic, and weaponize pretty much everything against people like Charlie Kirk. And if you go down again, this is, keep going down to the you'll see like 4 names on the bottom right. It'll be pretty good. Stop right there, right there. Bernadine Dorn, Bill Ayers, and 2 others. And guess who is a great friend of Barack Hussein Obama? Bill Ayers, of course, his wife Bernadine Dorn. Guess who was on the front page of the New York Times on 9/11? It was standing on the American flag. It was Bill Ayers. Guess where Obama launched his campaign from? It was Bill Ayers' living room and Bernadine Dorn, of course. That's the manual. It goes on for another 100 pages. But in at least at a mechanical level, below what you're talking about, Sam, that shows basically what the plans are to overtake this country by revolution, by the end of a gun. Okay, I just want, folks, if you don't, if you have, you can search Prairie Fire, Prairie Fire, and find that document yourself and download it and read it. I guarantee you, it will tell you, it will horrify you. Because violence like this has been glorified. I just want to toss it in there only as a resource for people to understand what's going on in the physical, at this level. But you continue, please, because your message is more encompassing. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. So that was an organized effort in the 70s. But if you go back to the late 40s and early 50s, the communists started their takeover of our universities and having professors infiltrate our major universities to infect the minds of our youth. Now, when Putin took over after the dismantling of the Soviet Union, Putin and his men started to study the effects of gay, trans, sexual dysphoria behavior, and very quickly decided that this would weaken the United States incredibly from within. So if, Eric, if you could find the document that I sent you that talks about the billions of dollars that were donated to education in 2020 for very specific reasons, very tight guidelines, to give the equipment, little pads, iPads, there you go, ESF funding at a glance, $276 billion awarded, 16,000 plus school districts and other educational agencies. This money was specifically, keep this in mind, specifically for remote education. Now, we're going to change the word remote to what it really is in a minute. But this was the money to buy the equipment to get kids isolated in their home and to give them access to the internet and Roblox and Discord and these other channels, these other conduits that they could infect our youth with at a level that was unprecedented. Now, if we could go to the number one, number two, and number three slides, we're going to expand a little bit on this. Let's start with how this works. Now, what we're going to talk about is the fundamental structure of a PSYOP, because I want to tie this together with both COVID and federal funding by the Biden administration and the mechanism that ultimately resulted in the youth of our country thinking that murder was okay. How did they destroy the moral framework of our high school and college students and junior high students and even grade school students to a large degree? How did they do that? Let's go to the number one, number two, and number three slides, if you could cue those, and then we'll talk about it. The first step of a PSYOP is isolation. Okay? Isolation is where you separate someone from multiple opinions and influences. And when you're ready, go ahead to number two. We'll scroll through these things quickly. So the first step is to isolate. Once you've isolated, then you can construct the echo chamber. Okay? This is where the young person that's been isolated from an education standpoint now gets placed into an echo chamber conduit, the internet. And they can be fed the same lies from multiple sources. And they literally live for months, if not years, in an echo chamber, and they become attached to the echo chamber. Now, so we have isolation. And then step two, I like to call indoctrination. But the indoctrination must include the creation of the echo chamber. So they don't have any competing ideals to ponder, think about, or rationalize. Let's go to number three whenever you're ready. So first is isolation, then the echo chamber and indoctrination. And then the last step to seal the deal is to get them to attach to a tribe. Because once you're part of the tribal script and you understand the script and they convince you in the echo chamber that your very life is at risk and that you must fight the enemy. So the tribal script basically puts you in a posture where you have to fight the other tribe. And this is where they introduce the end justifies the means. It's in the final step when they get you indoctrinated into the tribal script and the tribal narrative that they convince you that the end justifies the means. In other words, your very survival is at stake here. You must do anything and everything to defeat the enemy. This is how they convinced our youth that murder was an acceptable way to do business and live as a human being. And it's not just the far left. This is the bad news. It is almost the whole left and a small percentage of independents. It's almost half the country, folks. This is a level of evil that has infiltrated our country that is beyond your wildest imagination. And we better wake up, because Charlie Hughes, or the guy you had on in the video before, he described one of the mechanisms of their strategy. Unfortunately, brother,
I cut it off because he actually used the same slides as you did, right. explaining the PSYOP. The same thing. So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, so he's done his research. The problem is that he doesn't have an answer. So his answer is to not get in a kinetic war.
Yes.
That's his answer. No kinetic war. And believe me, all my spec ops buddies, all the badass operators I've worked with in my life, we all agree that a civil war in America is absolutely the worst. Yeah. Avoid it if you can. But here's the reality. Here's the reality. These people are not going to stop because they are fully indoctrinated. They are not going to stop killing Americans. They're not going to stop killing innocent people. They are terrorists. They cannot be negotiated with. If you think you can negotiate with these people, good luck. Good luck with that. You are delusional on multiple levels if you think you can negotiate. And I'm not talking about the far left. I'm talking about the far left, the left, and a significant number of independents. These people have no moral framework. To be able to negotiate with someone, you have to have a human being that has some respect for life. Now, why are Christian men and women so resistant to what I said? It's the false belief systems. It's the misinterpretations of Scripture. And I'd like to cover this. You've read a Bible verse that says, turn the other cheek. Okay? That's a valid concept. And that concept is for your neighbor and for your family members, people that do you wrong, that hurt you. You are, as a Christian, required to turn the other cheek. That advice was not meant for Goliath. David did not turn the other cheek. David recorded the first headshot in history. God bless my favorite sniper. Okay? Now, David used force to defeat evil. So there are times when God uses force to defeat evil, and God sanctions and approves of courageous men that use force. So if you're 100% turn the other cheek, and you don't realize that there are times in history when men have to act like men and use force to defeat evil, you are delusional. You have missed the boat. You have not studied history. You do not understand God, and you do not understand the danger that we are in right now. Now, I'm not proposing that we all grab slings and go throw rocks at people we don't agree with. But I am telling you that a time is coming in this country quickly. If we can't find a peaceful answer, where we will have no choice, and you better be prepared for both options. God is my witness. I do not want a civil war in this country. That is the bloodiest, most god-awful thing I could possibly imagine. But you better get prepared for the possibility, because these indoctrinated people are so many and so far down the road of indoctrination. And there's Bible verses that talk about this kind of thing. I didn't make it up. There are Bible verses that talk about when you reach a certain level of depravity, that God will give you over to your own depravity. There are unforgivable sins. And there's a level of depravity that you can go past where God washes his hands of you, and there's no more saving you. There's no more helping you. Okay? Now, if you don't believe me, let's talk about the left. Not the far left, the left. The left believe that it's okay to kill your baby the day that it's born. The left believes that it's okay to assassinate Charlie Kirk. Okay. The left believes that they can kill when they want to kill, and that you are evil if you use words to say, I think you're wrong. Now, if murder, death, releasing rapists, supporting felons, violent felons that harm innocent women and children, killing your unborn baby, and assassinating political figures doesn't reach your threshold of depravity, please call me tomorrow and tell me what does. Educate me. Because I don't know how you get more depraved than that. Honestly, I'd like to know. If you think this is a turn the other cheek scenario, explain it to me. What have I missed? Because killing innocent babies and killing people like Charlie Kirk and cutting the heads off of people, to me, seems like the ultimate in depravity. What am I missing? All right, now if Eric could start queuing up some of this stuff, we now understand one of the mechanisms that they destroyed our youth's moral framework foundation through isolation, indoctrination, and tribalism. Let's get into some of the other people that are pretty smart guys that may agree with me that we're dealing with a massive culture of death. Eric, you could just cue these videos as you get them, and when they start playing, I'll stop talking. But what we have in this country is a death cult. It has no reverence for human life. It has no belief in God. Anything that opposes it shall be destroyed, according to them. And they will celebrate and party the destruction of good. Now, we have Christians that have so many delusions in this country. We have Christians that worship Christ. When Christ told Satan, worship your Father in heaven only. Let's go to the Trump video, see what he says.
Social media is a cancer. What? Do you agree with that?
Keep our polls and our cancers, absolutely. Beyond cancer, the death.
Okay, so there's clear and convincing evidence that Trump does not think there are cancer in our country, that they are death. He just overtly stated that. I believe the president understands the problem we're in. I really believe he does. When Eric gets the next video up, we'll go to that. But see, the people in the intel agencies, the people that work for Trump, Trump's people, they understand this culture. They're getting intel reports on a daily basis. President gets a morning brief, and so do some of his staff. They understand what's going on in this country. I'm not sure they know how to explain it to the average American, and that's what scares me. Here's another smart guy, Mr. Rocketman.
You see how much violence there's on the left, with our friend Charlie Kirk getting murdered in cold blood this week, and people on the left celebrating it openly. The left is the party of murder and celebrating murder. I mean, let that sink in for a minute. That's who we're dealing with here.
That's another mother. You see them like that.
Well, now I guess we know how Elon Musk feels. By the way, he was on a live feed with one of the revolutionary leaders in Britain fighting for free speech. And that's why he came on that live feed to talk about Charlie Kirk. Because to the Brits, over 12,000 people have been arrested in the last 2 years for posts on social media. They don't have free speech in Great Britain. They haven't had it for a while. And there were, I want to say, 200,000 to 300,000 people in the streets protesting with the gentleman that Elon Musk was talking about. All right, let's go back to Charlie Hughes and let's get his summary on this.
None of this is an accident. This is word for word textbook psychological operations. And military psyops manuals literally describe how you isolate a target audience, then you pump them full of a bunch of outrage, you create a tribal us versus them identity. This is straight out of a psyops textbook. So why would we want to do this?
And I agree with him on that point, 100%. This is what happened. They used COVID and the internet to isolate and create the echo chamber and then build the tribalism and the hate. And make no mistake, it is hate. These people don't want you on what they consider their planet. My personal belief is that this is God's planet. This is a planet that he created, and he spun this rock around our favorite star, and he gave us a place to live. Maybe we should be grateful, loving, and thankful for our Father in heaven and appreciate God rather than try to be God. And this is what some of these people are doing. If you've got another video, let it rip. It's just one of these things that we are so far out of position as Christians, we cannot see the truth. And I would love at some point for Doug to have me on and say, Sam, the world's going to hate you for this, but I'm just too curious not to ask the question. And the question I want him to ask, not tonight because we don't have time, the question I want him to ask is, why do so many Christians have trouble seeing the truth? And why are there so many false belief systems in the Christian community? Because I'm going to get into it. All right, here's another video. Let's let it roll. This is the hate part.
I have the best news ever.
What? Donald Trump died?
That's the best news. Second best news.
My president died?
Okay, third best news.
That Elon Musk died?
Okay, no. Nobody.
You still think it's the far left? We have parents teaching their children to hate and wishing death on people that share different political opinions than their parents do. We have parents teaching little girls to hate and wish death on some of the most productive human beings that have walked the earth. Elon Musk, really? You're going to find a reason to hate the guy? He's as objective and honest in his analysis of things as any popular figure I've ever heard. The guy's pretty smart. Why would you want to hate him? He's the only guy out there championing borders, boundaries being set for AI. Wisely describing the dangers of AI. Let's go to the next video and see what we've got next.
I don't want your salvation. I want you to die. We're not going to give you a second chance. Even when you spent for it, on your knees.
You know, they don't just hate us. They write songs about killing us, about not giving us a second chance. Do you really want to attempt to negotiate these people? I think that's a valid question. Is it even possible to negotiate with people that want you murdered? Maybe you've never had a question like that asked. If you've worked in the Middle East, if you worked in places like Afghanistan, you've been places I've been, you stay up at night sometimes thinking about questions like that. But now we have to ask that question about the United States. Do you really want to attempt to negotiate with people that want you dead? At what point do you begin the negotiation from? Where do we go from here? You know, this is the operative question. And if Eric can start throwing up the other slides, we'll kind of discuss this case and where we go from here. And how do we come up with some kind of a solution that keeps us out of a civil war?
Is this not even possible?
Say what?
Given the numbers, given the intensity of the hatred, given the fact that we have not, that we've tolerated all of this evil, is that even possible to avoid something kinetic? Because at what point do we realize that, hey, you know what? There's no talking because they would rather have us dead than talk. And by the way, you know, who is they? Definitely the left, definitely the some on the right. I mean, it's not, again, it's not left right. It's evil versus everything else. But where, how, who's pulling the strings of these individuals? Obviously they've been indoctrinated, trained through a psyop, but who's conducting the psyops? And I'm just curious, but continue, please.
Okay, so let's go to a verse that I believe, while Eric's looking to put up these other slides, let's go to a verse that I believe has been misinterpreted for a long time by Christians. And I want to give you my take on it. Tell me I'm crazy. But, you know, in the interest of Charlie Kirk, let's have a debate about it. Let's have an open debate about it. So let's go to Ephesians 6:12. Charlie was big on this verse, and I believe he misinterpreted it, and I believe a lot of people have, so it's understandable. It says, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places." So a lot of people interpret this verse with the most dramatic, the most apocalyptic part of this verse. And Hebrew writers were very much steeped in apocalyptic performances, apocalyptic writing style. It was a style of the day, okay? But this is a fairly interesting list. So let's not just focus on 1/10 of the list. Let's look at the whole thing. Okay, the last part of the verse, it says, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Okay, obviously there are spiritual forces in the heavenly places that are wicked. And that's part of who our battle is against. But this verse also says some other things that I want to talk about that we tend to ignore as Christians. And one is, but against the rulers, the leaders of our governments that are wicked, against the powers and against world forces of darkness. Those aren't spiritual forces. Those are things located here on earth. Those are human beings. Okay? Now, I'm in the, let's see, Eric put up a different translation. Okay. Principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness. Okay. But it's not accurate to focus just on the spiritual forces in the heavens. That's part of the battle. But here's the thing that I've learned traveling around the world, fighting for freedom and dealing with evil. If you've never seen someone with a Russian 12.7 machine gun innocent women and children, Muslims, into ditches that they've dug with their bulldozers, and witnessed that with your own eyes, maybe you haven't seen evil at the level I have. But I want to talk about evil, and I want to talk about this whole spiritual thing versus flesh and physical, because humans are confused, in my opinion. The thing that they're confused about is that for thousands of years, the things that we couldn't explain, we called spiritual forces. Once we learned the physics behind it, the science behind it, it left the spiritual realm and entered into the scientific realm with the scientific method. We could repeat. We explained things like magnetism for years. For thousands of people thought magnetism was something spiritual, something crazy spiritual, unexplainable. So the unexplainable, which has been thrown into the spiritual bucket, in many cases, has over time, in the advance of science and understanding God's design, has become part of the scientific world and in the scientific bucket. But here's what I know from experience. Here's what I'm betting. And that is, everything that happens in the physical world, in the world of flesh and blood on earth, has spiritual consequences. The spiritual wickedness and everything that happens in the spiritual realm has physical consequences on Earth. So doesn't that inexplicably tie them together and make them part of the same system? I mean, logically, I mean, when you really think about it, everything that significantly affected you in the physical realm has had spiritual consequences, and everything that's happened to you in the spiritual realm has been manifested in some way physically. So at what point do we stop the minutiae and the argument about what we're up against and understand that we live in God's system and that everything we do has consequences, and that evil manifests it in not just the spiritual realm, but very much so in the physical realm? Now, why do I say that? The main reason I believe that so emphatically is because when Christ returns for the second time, is he coming with flowers and a bundt cake? Is he coming with brownies to pass out? No, he's bringing a legion of angels with him, capable by Scripture's measure of destroying over 100,000 men one night. He's bringing a legion of angels with him to destroy evil. Now, if this battle was just in the spiritual, I'm pretty sure Christ could come up with the magic words to make evil go away. But when he returns, he's bringing his angels with him, and we ought to be asking why. And that is the number one reason why I believe that the battle is not just spiritual. It's also in the physical realm. Now, we have a myriad of stories in the teleological view of Scripture where people intervene physically. Noah's Ark, Cain and Abel, Noah's Ark, David, Joshua. Think of the great warriors of the Bible. They didn't say, oh, no, our battle's in the spiritual realm, guys. We need to pray and not worry about taking that city and destroying evil. We can just pray and solve this. Now, I'm not demeaning prayer. Don't take it as that. We are supposed to be praying unceasingly throughout the day. But God is my witness, the battle is not just spiritual. And we better get used to the fact that somebody has to do the work. Charlie Kirk did the work. He went into the lion's den and debated Satan's children constantly. He took the risk. He paid for it with his life, but he took the risk. He did the work. He created the relationships. He had the face-to-face conversations, and he tried to negotiate with the left. And we all know the result of that. It killed him because he was so effective. He was winning hearts and minds. He was one of the most effective disciples of young people that I can point to in history outside of Jesus Christ himself. So,
and that speaks to, Sam, in my world, that speaks to motive, okay? And I think the way I look at this is, well, somebody asked me why I thought that he was murdered, that he was assassinated, that he was killed. And it made me stop and think, because look, in the investigation of homicides, there are like six prime drivers of homicide. All right. You can look this up. It's not, folks, you can look it up. Unchanged throughout history and taught throughout the numerous courses in homicide investigation. But the bottom line, I don't think it necessarily has to be one specific motive. For example, it's the trans violence. Okay, yes, it's that. Pick another reason of many. It's a combination of that.
Trans hate turned violence.
I'm sorry?
Trans hate sexual dysphoria hate turned to violence.
Correct.
Is how I would describe a lot of these shootings.
Right. Now, is that the primary driver? Is that the primary motive? Perhaps in this case, but then, and let's not forget too of what we've seen in addition to Charlie Kirk's horrible, horrible assassination. Remember the man who stabbed that Ukrainian, beautiful Ukrainian girl, okay, and in the neck, and you had men on that very train watch her bleed out, did nothing.
Oh, it makes me sick.
Right. And by the way, the judge, just in case you missed this, that man is now, and I understand my words, I understand exactly what I'm saying, that a judge released that man into psychiatric, or released that man into a psychiatric ward for evaluation, kind of a step down. Now, again, the problem is not just the act, but what is happening with our judges, the judicial system. And it hasn't, I mean, this is all taking place over time. And we have to understand. So, I mean, yes, we're speaking about the most recent heinous event, but we cannot forget all of it. Hey, how quickly the murder, and this is trans inspired, the murder of the church that killed two children, which happened just, my goodness, the end of August.
3 weeks, less than 3 weeks ago.
Right. We are seeing this accelerated uptick of these events, and especially with the this mental illness dysphoria that is being embraced by the demonic left. So it is, it's one component of the evil that you reference, but continue, please. Go ahead.
And so what I want from Eric is, I sent him a slide with the Russian law pertaining to LGBTQ sexual dysphoria, gay, trans behavior in Russia. And I want to drive this point home. It is so important that you understand what I'm telling you, the truth about this. So in 2013, they started passing laws that would allow them to arrest flaming gays that were pushing gay behavior and doing some other things. And then in 2023, they really nailed it down. So understand that Putin knew that the ideology he wanted to poison American youth and weaken America with would also destroy Russia and make Russia weaker. And so they outlawed. You cannot be gay or trans in Russia. You will do 10 years in jail for one act. You can do 5 to 10 for a statement promoting gay behavior. Look at this. Displaying the rainbow flag can be grounds for administrative detention. That basically means going to jail. Okay? And when you look at the punishments for this, they do not tolerate gay or homosexual behavior, yet they drove our professors and infected our universities with professors to push these lies to American youth. Yet you do the same thing in Russia, you'd be thrown in jail. The same people that infected our youth's minds with this stuff do not allow it under any circumstances in their own country. You should be asking yourself, why is that? And why are we tolerating this immoral garbage? And all I've got to say is, if we're going to avoid a civil war, we're going to have to build a lot bigger mental institutions. We're going to have to build a lot more prisons, because this is mental illness and sociopathy at a level and a volume, a literal viral load on society that we have nothing in history to compare it to. I guess the closest thing would be the degradation of Sodom and Gomorrah. Y'all saw what happened to them, right? You read about it. Maybe you didn't see it with your own eyes, but you might have read about it. We ought to be thinking really hard as Christian men. How much longer are we going to tolerate this evil? How much longer are we going to allow people to preach to our youth to cut off their genitals and try and destroy God's creation and all of the gifts that God gave people? How long are we going to allow this to happen? They are poisoning society. And every year, the oldest and weakest die off, and a larger percentage of people become infected with this sociopathic, psychotic, sexually dysphoric murder cult. And that's exactly what it is. And anyone who tells you different is lying. They work for Satan. They are not telling you the truth. And so my question is, if Trump understands this, if Cash Patel truly understands this, how on earth do we fix this while A, avoiding a civil war, and B, protecting human rights? Because it's very easy to be a statist and clamp down on what you perceive as evil and violate God-given rights. And that would be horrible too. A civil war is probably the worst. But destroying everyone's civil rights would destroy America as well. It wouldn't be the America we love.
Sam, may I ask, I'd like to ask you a question. Because I was also contemplating this, and believe me, folks, again, I don't think I've had so many messages, whether emails, and I actually got a letter today, but about this question I'm going to ask you. Let's just say we were successful in eradicating Planned Parenthood. We haven't been able to, regardless of President Trump. I mean, there's always these other people, you know, overruling whatever President Trump wants to do for good, especially when it comes to infanticide, especially when it comes to changing our changing these indoctrination centers. But my question to you, Sam, is this. If we, through some miraculous move, were able to correct the curriculum at all levels of education, which I don't believe we can, but if we, let's just say we could, we still have a generation plus of Satan's minions. Well, the indoctrinated, I should say, walking amongst us. So my question is, if we were able to do that, just fix everything in the captured educational system, would we still have a problem? How big of a problem? And are we still talking about, I mean...
Well, you identified the biggest problem, and that is that we still have a generation of psychos, sociopaths.
Yeah. What do we do with that?
And so we're going to have to build more jails. We're going to have to build more psych wards. And we're going to have to assess a cost for any sexual dysphoria behavior that professes violence, promotes violence, acts out in a violent way, inhibits other people's rights. The only moral way I can see to fix this problem is start cuffing these clowns and making them do jail time and tell them, look, you're entitled to your own opinion, but if you cut your penis off, you need mental help. Okay? If you went through an operation as a female to become a man, A, do you recognize that you are an XX and not an XY? And if they say, yes, I recognize that, I just feel more comfortable with a male exterior and I'm not violent, let them live their life. But if they say, oh no, I'm a male. Okay, that's mental illness. That's a lie. You know, padded room.
What about the enablers? More than that, the doctors, these insane doctors who
they should lose their license.
They've got to. We've got to.
You got to pull their life. They're operating on kids, cutting penises off little boys.
Yeah,
they should be in jail. They shouldn't just lose their license. They shouldn't have to resign from the medical field. They should be in jail.
So I agree 100%. But let me ask you one final question. So we've gone through from 2017 through today, we've gone through a lot and we've witnessed a lot of lawlessness by individuals in government and outside of government, but a lot of lawlessness, a lot of things that seemingly could be prosecuted. But we have yet to see any arrests. I mean, from the Hunter Biden laptop to the 50 whatever idiots that signed that declaration, to the people who were engaged in election fraud, to the COVID liars. You know, we haven't seen any arrests.
I don't know what Cash Patel is waiting on. I want you to look up Title 18, 241, Conspiracy to Deprive Rights. Every intel officer that signed the letter falsely claiming that Hunter Biden's laptop was a Russian scheme rather than what it was, they knowingly did this, and they did this to try and deprive Donald Trump of his rights. And
many that, others related to that, by the way, but go on. Yeah.
For that, they should be doing felony jail time. It is clearly a violation of Title 18, 241, conspiracy to deny rights. And that's a felony. And I have no idea what they're waiting on. But that's so obvious. That's all in the public domain, what they did. And mm-hmm. how and the fact that they did it to deny Donald Trump his right to run for office and his right to participate in a fair election. I mean, I'll tell you what, if Cash Patel and Dan Bongino don't start cuffing some clowns and creating some perp walks, there might be a revolution between the real men in America and Cash Patel and Dan Bongino and the FBI and the Department of Justice. Because it might not be between the patriots and the trans people. It might be between these do-nothings at the FBI. You know, the FBI,
I'm okay with that, brother. I really am.
The FBI did not arrest Charlie Kirk's killer. That is a lie.
Thanks. Thank you. Yes, you are absolutely correct.
The suspect called the head of their church, the preacher in their church. They were, I think, Latter-day Saints. They called the top guy, what you would call a preacher in a Baptist church or a priest in a Catholic church. They called the top guy. That guy happened to be a U.S. Marshal. The U.S. Marshal called the sheriff. The sheriff called the dad and said, look, you want a SWAT raid on your house? You want people shot at? I mean, you want to put your family at risk? Then do nothing. Otherwise, get your son and turn him in. Or I can't protect you or your family from here on out. I can't save you from what's about to happen. And the dad said, I'll go get him. I'll bring him to you.
Yep.
And the dad got the job done to his credit. But all the FBI did was put out some stills from a video.
And poor ones at that, but yeah. And by the way, we can question too the photograph of the gun that was found in the woods. Look, on a minimal level or the most basic level, there is ample evidence that this assassin, I'm not even going to say his name, had help. I mean, physical, on site, and help. I mean, before, during, and after. Okay. The actual event. There's no question about it. The photographs of the rifle, none of this makes sense, but to the people out there trying to make it make sense, I just would recommend looking at the bigger picture like Sam's talking about. Go ahead, sir.
Well, is it important to find Charlie Kirk's killer? Yes. Is it important to arrest and convict all of those that aided or abetted or were accomplices on the assassination of Charlie Kirk? Absolutely, that's important. And with the digital footprint that this guy left, messaging and texting, they're gonna convict him of this, whether he's took the actual shot or not.
If he lives.
And, well, here's the thing I don't want to forget to say. I believe that this guy will go the way of Epstein.
I do too.
Awesome. I don't believe the FBI is going to do a legit investigation and be transparent about this. I believe that this guy's either going to kill himself in prison or he's going to get shanked by a prisoner, right? And I believe that we're never going to get the story on this. You know, what's interesting about these high profile assassinations is the shooter always seems to get shot himself or get killed himself or hang himself. And we never get to the bottom of anything.
How convenient is that?
Yeah. So they know this. They know how sensitive everybody is about Epstein and how sketchy the whole suicide theory is. And the cameras didn't work. The guards fell asleep, blah, blah, blah. And they know people are really watching. And they let this guy kill himself. They let this guy hang himself. They let somebody shank this guy. And this country's coming unglued.
I really believe that we're one more event from a full-blown, outright, just... things will definitely... involve kinetic action. That's just my thinking. I mean, we're there now, but a level of restraint still exists, which I can't explain, but okay. And Sam, go ahead. We have about, I guess about 8-7 minutes left. Take it. It's all yours.
Well, we better start creating some perp walks, people funding the violence, funding the political activism. I got to tell you, I work with SWAT teams all over the country. I know a lot about the violent protests. There are big money people. They're organizers. They buy bricks. They buy gas masks. They buy tools to bust up curbs with. They buy all kinds of things. For these protesters, these are paid protesters that are really paid provocateurs to commit violence and destruction. And I personally witnessed $72 million worth of arson damage done in Ferguson in 2014 and a few more million in 2015. They were all paid. I had guys that were working for George Soros come up and show me their paycheck. It had a corporate name on the check. I researched the corporation owned by George Soros. So I'm not kidding when I'm telling you that there are a lot of paid provocateurs, paid assassins, paid indoctrinators, and they're not going away. We better start arresting them. Arrest the organizers. Arrest the guys like Soros and his son, and there's about 10 other guys that I could name. That are all funding this violence and funding this indoctrination and fomenting the hate that gets turned into violence. It better get addressed or we're going to war. And we don't have a lot of time to address it. That's the part that worries me. We closed a bunch of mental health facilities. We've got prisons, but not a lot of prison space. And to deal with this problem, to really get the criminals involved, there are so many of them. We're going to need a lot bigger mental institutions and a lot larger prisons to fix this problem. And we're going to have to hold these people for at least a generation. And we're going to have to punish the people that are in that age group that were indoctrinated and make examples out of them to be a deterrence to these other psychos. And unless we can do that quickly and effectively, y'all better get ready for war. Because that's what they want. and it will be forced upon you. I'll give you an example. I had about six Jehovah Witnesses come ring my doorbell one day. And the oldest guy, Lee, is a 72-year-old black man. Sweetest guy you'd ever meet. Worked as a machinist at McDonnell Douglas. He was just an awesome guy. Grew up in the South in Mississippi. He lived with his grandmother, who grew up sort of at the end of the slavery when she was born. And she told him some things that he told me about slavery and the cities and the blacks and the social workers and FDR system that destroyed the black family in America. Remove fathers from the home. I don't want to get into that here. But Lee was leading this group of Jehovah's Witnesses into my living room. Some of them were young, their first day of knocking on doors in discipleship. And I always opened my door on Monday mornings because it was my day off. And Lee and I did a Bible study together. And the guy was a walking concordance. He knew the Bible better than any preacher I ever knew. And he was willing to study from the New American Standard, not the Jehovah's Witness Bible. And so we would talk about real issues, and we would argue about most theological points. We didn't agree on most of it. But he brought these young people in one day, and we started talking about pacifism. And Jehovah's Witnesses are hardcore pacifists. And this young couple, they told me they just got married a few weeks ago. And they're sitting on my sofa. I'm in my lounge chair. And I look at Lee, and I said, Lee, here's this young, pretty girl here. If you left my house today, walked out to the driveway, I have a long sidewalk to my driveway. And I said, a guy jumps out from behind a tree and throws this girl on the ground and tries to rape her. You're going to give me that pacifist garbage you just gave him? Really? And he folded his hands, he put his chin on his cane, and he leaned forward on the sofa and he said, I'd probably hit him with my cane. That's what he told me, right? And I said, well, thank you for the honest answer. I appreciate that. And I looked at her husband. I said, you're going to give me the pacifist garbage you just gave me and watch a man rape your wife? And he went, oh. He hesitated for about 3 seconds, and I'll bet you can guess what happened next. The gal threw an elbow, stomped on his foot, and stomped out of the house and went and sat in the car because she had a moral framework that expected him to lift a finger to defend her. And so the pacifist argument lasted in the Jehovah Witness group for about 4.5 seconds. Yeah.
But isn't that emblematic or illustrative of it's part of that indoctrination, Sam. We only have about 1.5 minutes left. Isn't that part of that indoctrination, erroneous Christian teaching, as well as the yes. indoctrination part of things?
I tell people all the time, I only have two things in common with Christ that I know of. One is we both built our own weapons, and the other is we love his Father and my Father God. It's the only two things I have in common that I know for sure. Jesus built his own scourge, yep. went into the temple, turned the money changers' tables over, and drove them out with a whip with 7 cattails. Yep. Look up what a scourge really looks like. It was the most feared weapon of the day. So if you're going to talk to me about passive Christianity in the face of evil, I'm going to remind you of Christ. I'm going to remind you of David. I'm going to remind you of Joshua. And I'm going to tell you, you better need to spend a lot more time in your Bible. And we better get ready.